All right, good morning. It is April 26, 2024, and we are starting to finally see maybe an end to cooler temperatures. The forecast is predicted to warm up dramatically and consistently. Some of us in the northern part of the state had frost yesterday and still pretty chilly this morning. But I think at this stage now we're starting to see the end of it. I won't declare we're frost free for the year, but we're getting pretty darn close to it. Online today, we've got Dr. David Gardner, we've got Pamela Sherratt, we've got Xiaowei Wu, Dr. Xiaowei Wu, Dr. Dave Scheller, we got Miranda Berger. Dr. Gardner, take it away.
All right. Good morning, everybody. So the crabgrass has germinated. It is one leaf out at the OTF Center, and that's about a week earlier than what we have seen. As far as historic norms, I would attribute that to, well, it's been a pretty nice spring so far, right? But this picture here is of crabgrass that's at about the two-leaf stage. And I'm using this picture to illustrate that so long as the crabgrass is no larger than one to two leaf, you can still use liquid formulations of dithiapyr. And that will give you post-emergence control of that one or two-leaf stage crabgrass, but then also put down a pre-emergence barrier for you. You can also use prodiamine and quinclorac. There are commercial formulations of those two actives, or you can tank mix it on your own. Practically speaking, I would do that up until about June 1st. And then after that, you might as well wait until the crabgrass becomes more visible and switch over to more of a conventional post-emergence program. Got a lot of calls this week about our friend Fig Buttercup, Ranunculus, Lesser Celandine, whatever you want to call it. It is kind of pretty, at least, but it is an invasive. And so, the recommendations are to just dig it up, harvest it like it's onions, remove the bulbs. Non-selective herbicides like glyphosate will work, although they will also work pretty well on your turf grass. So that's kind of a problem. Selective control, rumor has it if you find a three-way herbicide that contains MCPA, triclopyr, and dicamba, for example, Cool Power is a formulation that contains all three of those active ingredients. But if you find a herbicide that it has at least two of them, then that is purported to have relatively good activity. The key here is that it's better to try to control this before it flowers. At this point, control is going to be pretty difficult. And so remember, it's an ephemeral, and so you're almost better off to map it out and plan to hit it earlier next year. This is also that time of the year that I get a lot of calls about annual bluegrass and how to control it because it's very visible because it's in bloom. The problem with annual bluegrass is that it's very closely related to grasses that we try to grow on purpose, right? And so there have been various herbicides that are on the market or have been over the years. Ethafumisate or Pergrass has been around since 1994. For some people, that works. Some people, not so much. Remember, annual bluegrass is really good at genetic diversity, right? It's good at acquiring resistance to things. And so that herbicide might be effective, it might not. Amicarbazone or Exonerate is something that came out later. And there's a three application program that we're a little late to be starting on that, but that product can be effective. Methiazolin or Poecure is the one that has the best selective activity, but it's only registered for use on golf courses right now. But I'd point out Bispyrobac sodium. This is recently re-released to the cool season market as Velocity PM. And if you look, we're getting into about the time where they recommend the use of that particular product. You want to follow the label carefully. The caveat with this one is that it's registered for use in things like perennial ryegrass and tall fescue, but in Kentucky bluegrass, not so much. The worry is that there would be considerable injury to Kentucky bluegrass, which, we have a lot of around here. But anyway, these are options for you to consider. Another option to consider is to ignore it, and it will become less visible around June 1, right? Another thing that I've seen is a lot of our broadleaf weeds are starting to bloom, especially this guy, ground ivy. And one thing that you could do is you could try to convince your clients that it's pretty, right? I mean, it is in the same family as this plant that they plant on purpose, probably within 5, 10 feet of where they have this particular problem. But in all seriousness, that's one of our more difficult weeds to control. If you just throw a generic three-way amine formulation at it, sometimes that will work, like that paint at the top. Sometimes it is really slow to work, and sometimes you kind of get control, and then the ground ivy starts to recover. And so For Groundhog, I usually recommend that you find a herbicide that contains triclopyr or some of the four-way products, such as like T-Zone, 4-Speed XT, Speed Zone, et cetera. Another option to consider is Sure Power, but that product you do not want to use now. Do not use that product right now. You will cause considerable phytotoxicity to the lawn. Remember that Sure Power works magic on ground ivy, but it's better to use that on grass that's green, but not actively growing during the months of June, July, and August. I'll speak more about broadleaf weed control as we go on during the month of May, but I would point out real quick that GDD Tracker tracks things other than just crabgrass emergence. One of the things that they also talk about is should you be using amine or ester-based herbicides now? And they're saying that it's about time for us to be switching from ester formulations over to amine formulations. Remember, with esters in hot weather, not only do you have an increased chance of injury to desired ornamentals, but anybody who went to field day last year, you probably saw my demonstration where I put out a bunch of fancy ester-based herbicides and it was like 80 degrees and none of them worked because they all, the surface was dry 10 minutes after application. So it's not just the risk to the ornamentals, it's that the esters start not working as well in warmer weather. And so as temperatures go into the 70s and especially the 80s, think amines. You can use the esters, but that has to be earlier in the day. That's another thing that you can do. All right, Ed, that is what I have for today.
Dave, you brought up an extremely interesting point there with the dryness of the leaf surface, and I want to follow up on it. So while we see on our pesticide labels the active ingredients, and we put a lot of emphasis in that, what's your opinion on the inert materials and how impactful they are? Because I think that's something that a lot of people who are applying stuff don't kind of give much consideration to.
It's a complicated subject and maybe something that I could speak more about during the month of May, but sometimes our 3- and 4-way herbicides are formulated such that they have proper surfactants in them, or the recommendation is that you can add a separate surfactant. But really the main thing here, what people should be trying to do is make sure that the surface of the leaf is wet for as long as possible. That's the goal. The longer the leaf is wet, the more time you have to get the herbicide into the plant. After the residue dries, it'll wash off in the rain, you'll get some root uptake. But that's really the main thing to consider. Something else is that you want to be careful what you add to the tank, depending on what it is that you're spraying. For example, the protox inhibiting herbicides like carfentrazone, sulfentrazone, et cetera, those are kind of phytotoxic to turf. And so if you look at those labels, they say don't be adding something that will, maybe increase the chances of undue injury to the turf grass. So again, you've given me ideas for things to talk about during the month of May.
Thank you, David. I knew I'd be of help somehow. All right, the inimitable Pablo Sherratt, who's still living on a high from the win for the Blues this week.
Good morning. All right, so I'm going to try and share my screen here. I have a quick question for Dr. Gardner while I'm setting up. Dr. Gardner, for those people that did put a pre-emerge out and then realize they need to seed, what's your advice?
Well, if you know the person that did it, what you do is you walk up to them and you say, ha, 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 let's all look at the person who put down pre-emerge on an area that they're going to seed and laugh, ha, 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 ha. But in all seriousness, it's kind of a difficult situation because the pre-emerge does a really good job of preventing our turf grass from germinating too. You can buy activated charcoal and attempt to deactivate the pre-emergence herbicide. Sometimes that works. It's not something that I have a lot of experience with, but the good news is that the pre-emergence herbicide will wear off right about the time that you should actually be trying to establish from seed, which is going to be mid to late August.
Okay, thank you. The very first
to clarify, you'll be looking at bare dirt until then.
Well, yeah, there's that.
So I guess the moral of the story is read the label, which. As you said at the beginning, I could say something funny to the person who did it, but then I would probably get divorced. So,
well, I mean, it's usually not a trained applicator. It's somebody else that ended up causing the problem. And so, yeah, that's frustrating for the people that are like the pesticide applicators are in the managerial positions mm-hmm. when they have trained applicators that are causing problems like that.
And I think that's, I think I've been to a couple of extension visits where a high school, for example, has contracted that out. They have companies that come in and make those applications, and they don't understand that that's the result of it. And so I think that's, it just bears repeating, I think, every spring, that if you do want to seed, then you need to read those labels carefully for the re-entry period, so reseeding period. Okay, thank you, Dr. Gardner. Well, I just wanted to give a quick update, just to get some dates on people's radar and calendar for people to pencil in for this year. For the second time, we're teaming up with COSCI, and we have a We Grow Scientists event coming up this week at Waterman Farm, May 1st, 3 till 7. It's free. So families are welcome. Learners of all ages are welcome. And we're going to put on, you know, hands-on STEM activities, and the Turfgrass Science team will be there. So parking is free. They'll have some food trucks there that are free. And these great hands-on activities. So all families welcome. The Ohio Sports Field Managers Association have a field day coming up, Cincinnati Reds, on June 26th. This is going to be a super popular event. Space is limited, so encouraging people to sign up on the Ohio Turfgrass website sooner rather than later for this one. It's going to be a great day. Our OSU Field Day is Tuesday, August 13th, we typically have the Ohio Lawn Care Field Day the day after. So again, get those down on your calendar. We'll be presenting our most up-to-date research, have some hands-on activities, etc. Again, on the Ohio Turfgrass website. And then the Fall Field Day, this is something new that the Ohio Sports Field Managers have never done before. It's going to be a great day. We're going to visit the Scott's Miracle-Gro Company in Marysville on September the 12th. So again, through the Ohio Turfgrass website, you can sign up for that, and the turf team will be there. And then the turf team has been busy working behind the scenes already, getting ready for the Ohio Turfgrass Foundation conference and show, December 9th through 12th at the Convention Center here in Columbus. Couple of highlights just to throw out, a couple of new things that we're going to do. We're going to have a seminar on wheels. More information about that coming soon. Our student day will be on the Wednesday, and we've got some exciting things happening with that. And then we're going to have what we're going to call banter, right, Dr. Nangle? We're going to have these interactive, engaging sessions where peers can come together and discuss topics and learn from each other. So we're excited about all these new things that we're doing with the OTF conference. More details will be coming out shortly on that. We've got a stellar lined up of academic and professional speakers. So more on that coming soon. And with that, Dr. Nangle, I will stop sharing and hand off to the next speaker.
Seems your time. One other additional date I want to add in there, Pam. The Northeast Field Day for the Ohio Lawn Care Association is on June 20th, and that will be on the Worcester campus. And that will have a similar pattern. Multiple OSU speakers. I know Dr. Wu is coming up. Dr. Carr is going to be there. Dr. Zane Roddenbush. And expecting a lot of good high-cut turf education. All right, following on from that, Dr. Wu, what do we got?
Good morning, everyone. So today I have several paths to talk about. Now I start to share the screen. Okay. So the first thing I would want to talk about is annual progress waiver. So we are still funding. We are still funding the waiver adults in the traps and so flashing, but the numbers, especially in the traps, are declining, and the reproductive development also declined, and so that shows that we have passed the peak adult activities. And adult side is starting to get infected because the weevils have finished the most finished the job, get the drop down lay eggs. So And right now, the eastern red bat has passed the full bloom, and dogwoods are in full bloom. And we started to see Navi feeding on the stems. And in Cincinnati area, we started to see seconding stars and very with size. The density was very in some higher size. We found over 100 per square feet, the orange treatment. And so for early novicide sprays can be applied this time, targeting the early stars feeding inside the stem. There are several options. Spirato, which is an insect growth regulator, can be applied at different stages of this nova, and also and actually can be applied at the peak adult activities. Because in the interferes with the chitin biosynthesis, interferes with the insect molting and hatching as well. And the infrared dye mites are good options as well. And Ferrin's tetrino can be applied against the larva. And also a sunny print durantis, the same chemicals, chlorantraniliprole pro, they also have some efficacy against ABW larva as well. But the efficacy may be applied by, may be affected by pyrethroid resistance. And ARENA have some efficacy against the early stars as well. So when you do the application, make sure that you're watering with 0.1 inch of irrigation post the spray. And so if you have very low numbers, I'll say there's really no big worry. It's really should be based on sampling. I will say that if you get using a turf plugger about 1.5 inch diameter, if you get one or two nova in each sample, that means about 30 to 50 per square feet. That means if it's above that level, you need to treat. Generally, the healthy grass can stand some, can tolerate some damage. Another thing I want to mention is the white grub. So yesterday I heard there was a topic about white grub control. People are finding white grubs in the lawn and thinking about what they should do. So let's review the life cycle of the annual white grubs, because most of the white grub species have annual life cycle. So at this time, it said they overwinter as full grown 13 star larvae in soil. So at this time, it's around April. April to May, they will start to pupate soon. So, and then they will get into adults in June to July and start to lay eggs and go through three nova stages from August to September. And then in October, they will reach big larvae again and start over winter. So the big ones are tougher to control in general. And the best time to control them, I would say, is kind of like for mid-June to mid-August, preferably July to mid-August, using the preventative methods before the damage occurs. So right now, we're approaching early May soon, and that's really not ideal time to control them, because they will soon pupate again to adults and fly away. They may come back to visit the same site if conditions are suitable, but the damage at this time is kind of like, it's very, very small because the roots, they do not feed them much before pupate, and the roots can recover easily from that, because the grass that actively growing in the active growing stage. So another thing I want to mention is the cream flies. We have seen last week both a native cream fly larva, cream fly adult, and also European marsh cream fly adult. You can see the difference is in the front wing. The native cream fly is black, and then the invasive species has kind of like the pale march near the wing front. So the native species is actually do not pose big concerns, as the many feed on the thatch, the dead plant materials, but the invasive species may cause damage on the roots and tinage and crowns. That's why I have. Okay. I will stop sharing.
Thank you, Dr. Wu. All right, up next, Dr. Shetler.
Thanks, Ed. I wanted to again reiterate what Dr. Wu had said. When it comes to these invasive crane flies, we really only have reported damage up around the Cleveland area, the Lake Erie area, but we were pretty shocked to see the adults flying down here in the Columbus or Central Ohio area. And I've had some other reports of people seeing them. The one that we're seeing this spring that's the invasive species is what's called the European marsh crane fly that has two generations per year as opposed to the regular European crane fly that has one generation per year. And I'm a little worried about the marsh crane fly because that one, the larvae can feed during the winter months while we have these mild conditions. It's also been reported to feed under the cover of snow. And when the snow melts, the turf is gone because it does eat the grass blades. And so it's been confused, I would say surprisingly, but I'm never surprised by what people perceive that they're seeing as being snow mold damage. Snow mold lays the grass down flat. So the leaf blades are there, but the crane flies actually take the grass blades gone. You're going to see bare soil with the crane flies. The crane flies are difficult to control, especially in the larger stages. But the combination products are what are recommended for those. Aloft has been performing quite well. Some of the new diamides, acelaprin has been claimed to be working fairly well as a single product, but we haven't performed any studies with those here in Ohio. And hopefully over the next few years, Dr. Wu will find some sites where we can do some testing of some of those products. What I wanted to talk about for the golf course industry and maybe for some of the sport turf folks, the little turf grass ant is showing up. It seems early. Normally the mounds start popping up in mid-May, but here they are in late April popping up. And I want to point out that if you do have the turf grass ant as a problem, especially on your greens or surrounds for the greens, this is an ant that you should get after as soon as you see the mounds. Its weakest point in its life cycle. It's basically spent all winter, the colony has spent all winter holed up in a nest using their food reserves to feed their larvae and the adult ants that are in the colony. So in the springtime, they have to get out and get food to replenish the food stores for the ant colony. And so if you hit them at that time with an appropriate insecticide, they're liable to actually eliminate the colony and not come back. Like we see if you do treatments in the summertime, the ant colonies appear to come back usually in 2 to 3 weeks. But if you get after them early in the season, you may be able to actually take out the colony for the season. Again, in our studies, and Dr. Wu's got some interesting protocols for doing some new ant control studies this season. I look forward to her testing some of the newer insecticides for these, but our traditionals have been combinations of a neonicotinoid like clothianidin and bifenthrin. That one you can buy as Aloft, or some other people are using a combination of the full rate of imidacloprid, in other words, the full grub rate, with a 1 to 2 tenths of a pound of bifenthrin as a tank mix. Those combinations. The strategy here is the pyrethroid knocks out the foraging adults that are the workers that are out foraging around, and then the neonicotinoid works into the colony and takes out the brood and the nurse ants that are working in the colony, and you get a total colony collapse and quite often an elimination for the whole season. So we want to get out early in the season to get after those if at all possible. So that's what I've got to mention for this session.
Thank you, Dr. Shetler. All right. one of our erstwhile graduate students, Miranda Berger. Miranda, you want to give us an update on your project?
Yeah, so I'm studying beneficial bacteria on abiotic stress creeping bentgrass. So right now I'm finishing up my lab work. On Monday, I'm starting DNA extraction from last year's field season with Florence Sessoms. So we applied bacteria at different rates at different times of drought. So we're doing DNA extraction to see the persistence of the bacteria through the different times of application. And we're starting the field season this summer for our second summer. And then we're going to be doing the same thing, taking soil cores and testing for the persistence of the bacteria. In the lab right now, I just finished up with putting seedlings in a drought environment in the lab with a new protocol using polyethylene glycol. And now I'm inoculating that with bacteria. So I'm really excited to see the end result, to see if the bacteria helps with turf health and turf quality.
Thank you, Miranda, much appreciated. All right, as we wrap up our update for this week, we're still on the bi-weekly recordings. Keep that in mind. Dr. Carr will probably be back for the next one. One thing that it would be remiss of all of us to not make mention of, the turf industry, particularly on the academic side in the last week, has had a loss. And we send our sincere condolences to the family and turf family of all of those in Michigan State. Dr. Joe Vargas, in many ways, was irreplaceable. And he will be somebody that will be a loss for both family, friends, and the industry for years to come. And we'd like to give a nod to Dr. Joe. He's somebody who had a massive impact, not just locally, nationally, but globally, and really left a strong mark on the industry. With that, we will say thank you, and we will talk to you all in a couple of weeks' time.